Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and it is my pleasure to welcome Gary Waters to the show, former head coach in college basketball. He coached with Kent State, he coached with Rutgers, he coached with Cleveland State, and did some remarkable things with the team, both on and off the court. And his new book is out called The 10 Principles of a Character Coach. Gary Waters, welcome to Sports Interview.
Well, thanks, Anne. It's a great time in this part of the year to be on a talk show because there's a lot of things going on.
There's a lot of things going on. And just from a personal standpoint, I remember when you coached Cleveland State. I am originally from Brecksville, a suburb of Cleveland. And I went to University of South Florida in Tampa. So we have a couple geographical things in common.
Yes, you're exactly right.
So you got a really great blurb for your book from one of my favorite people in college basketball, Coach K, who said that Gary has written a must-read that transcends any professional genre. The 10 Principles of a Character Coach establishes character and morality-driven fundamental practices for all aspiring and veteran coaches to infuse into their coaching DNA. Which is a great plug from one of the great college coaches, right, Coach?
Definitely. He's the best. And, he may be considered the best of all times.
So give us a little background. I know you're originally from Michigan. How did you get into coaching? And give us a little timeline of your head coaching career.
Well, I started, the age is there. So I started a long time ago. I've coached for 43 years now. And when I got out of college, I had to make a decision because I had been drafted into the NBA. I went and tried and didn't make it. And I had to make a decision. What would I do? A lot of people continue to search for that dream and keep going. I said, no, that's just not me. And one of the things I wanted to do was I wanted to change lives and young people's lives. So that and I thought about what should I do? And the thing I thought about doing was coaching. And that, from that point on is when I started coaching.
And I know you quoted Dr. James Naismith in the book, who basically invented the game. And his insight and his mission about the game really is similar to what your book's all about.
Exactly. And you know what? When I first started the book, and then I started reading other researching books, I researched his. And when I researched his, I seen his definition of the reason behind coaches. And when I seen that, I made a decision in my mind. I said, is this what coaches are supposed to be doing? And I looked at this and I said, if I look at the coaches today and compare it to what he said many, many years ago, do they match up? And I had a big question mark.
Exactly. Well, I know because he feels, as you do, that coaches should be advisors, counselors, father figures, to develop character, to develop patriotism and ethical values and that kind of thing. And you just don't see that in the game these days.
Yes. Now I can't say it's everyone. Let me mention this, Anne. One thing I'm doing right now in retirement is that I'm teaching a character development workshop for the police department, law enforcement. And the whole purpose is to get them to understand the importance of character and their values out there, because you hear all the things that's happening in society and everything else. However, when I researched everything, it's not everyone that's doing this. It's a selected few. And those selected few is making it bad for everyone. And the same thing in college basketball. There's certain people that are unethical and don't do the right things. And those few, take down many.
Right. What prepares one to become a good coach, in your opinion?
Well, I'm going to say, first and foremost, and that's mentioned in the book, is work ethic. Because you have to make sure that you put in the time to develop the skill that you're doing. And that's basically anything in life, when you think about it, Anne, that you got to put in time to become the best at what you're doing. So you have to work at it. So you got to go out and find out things about basketball. You got to get with special people or people that you feel are good coaches to help you move forward. And you got to learn from them. But then at the same time, you got to put yourself in the game. You got to work hard each day in the game to make yourself better. So you can identify if you're doing it right or if you're doing it wrong. However, you have outside people looking at you to evaluate you to give you some insight.
You know, but for many years, it's been winning is everything. So when did you first begin noticing a decline in principles, what you call principle-driven coaching?
Well, you know what? It was one. It was in when I was at Rutgers, and I started meeting a lot of people, and I started talking to a lot of coaches there, and I seen their behavior patterns at that time. However, in that part of the country, meaning the East, they still had a lot of respect for coaches. So coaches had a lot of power. So they can help kids or they can destroy kids, all those type of things. So, but I was seeing behavior patterns that I really didn't like, I didn't gravitate toward. So I made at that point when I was there, I said, you know what, it's time for me to understand what is the right way to do this thing and what is the wrong way to do this thing. And as a coach, you have to make that decision as well.
When you said they still had a lot of respect for coaches when you were a head coach at Rutgers, which was between 2001 and 2006, it wasn't like that in the other places that you coached at Kent State and in Cleveland State, or?
Well, no, I can't say it wasn't like that, but it wasn't as strong because they, you know, the coaches in New Jersey and New York, they really felt that they were on top of the game. And the people thought they were on top of the game. So they literally put a lot of emphasis on those coaches. And they listen to those coaches. Now, when the further you go out, you know, for instance, let's take where I'm at and in Tampa. They're not really caring about a lot of basketball. What their concern is football. So that's coming out in this area. He's really got to work at it for people to understand what he's trying to do for the game. So during that period of time, I seen things changing. I seen behavior patterns changing. I seen how coaches were valuing other things more than the right things. And what consequently what happens is that you teach this to the kids that you supervise. So you got to make sure that you're bringing the right things to the people that you're connected with.
So you felt you had a lot of respect as a coach at Rutgers. Obviously, you're in the New York metropolitan market. Basketball is huge there, college hoops. At one time, the Big East was so big, right?
Oh, yes.
But do you feel that with your priority as a God-fearing man, as a Christian, was it tough to garner that respect? Because that might not be the norm in college sports.
I tell you, Ed, you're right on it. You're getting right on it. And in that environment, you know, to have the values that I had is not consistent with many people in that area. Now that's a separate issue concerning coaching, okay? See, if you know, they felt in that area, if you could coach the game, they gave you all the respect in the world. Regardless if God was in your life or whatever was in your life. So the first thing I had to say to myself, I could not compromise my values and morals, regardless wherever I was. So I had to make that commitment first, and that's what I did out there in that area. And you know what? The funny thing about it, Ann, they respected that. They respected me. They understood. Now, I think one of the reasons why they respected it, because we were winning. When you win, then forget things.
Absolutely. Winning is everything. That just seems to be, I've covered sports for, gosh, almost four decades. And, you know, honestly, it's, there's good and bad in that statement, but I know it's tough when, if you're not winning and you're a God-fearing man, then that's a whole different issue. But I know I spent a lot of time on this subject because your first principle in your book is God over everything. And, right. You know, you actually were teaching your players that very concept. How difficult was it to get everybody to buy into that?
Well, you know, what I tried to do is give them information because I think that's the biggest key. You've got to give them information and then they have to make decisions. So I wasn't forcing anything upon them. I was just giving them information. Because, you know, in college and at even in high school, church and state is a major issue. So you got to make sure you bring it across the right way. But you know what I found out once I started communicating with the players, that they were highly receptive. That this is what they wanted. They wanted this. And so for me to infuse that into the way I was coaching really helped them. And it helped them change their lives in many places.
Sure. I would think that many of them were probably just starving for some of that guidance, for, you know, somebody to look up to, a mentor such as yourself, and the wisdom and, you know, that everything that comes with, you know, having God front and center in your life.
Right, right. And that's the whole key, was that they had to make sure that you put something above yourself, because our society is telling you to put yourself at the top, go for everything, you're the best, you can do this. And even in different families, that's happening. So I wanted them to make sure there's something stronger than them or bigger than them, and they had to look at that first.
My guest is Gary Waters. The book is called 10 Principles of a Character Coach. We talked about the first chapter. Principle 2 is improve yourself and others. Principle 3, live with integrity and honesty. Principle 4, treat others the way you want to be treated. 5, love unconditionally. So you listeners are understanding where this book is taking you. And the journey must have been very fulfilling. I'm sure you've combined all your years of coaching and what you've learned and what you were able to teach others into this book. It must be a very satisfying feeling, Coach.
It truly is. It truly is. And you mentioned the last one, love unconditionally. To put that as a principle, people would say, why do you have that in there? And the primary reason I put it in there is for a coach to understand that you have to be more than just a person teaching the game to them. You got to be an example for them to show them things. And so one of the things you may get many players that don't have that family structure, don't have that person that show love in their life. Now, if they see you doing it with my wife and my children, they'll get an understanding is this may be the best way to do things. So I want it to be an example at all times and in many cases.
And that all these principles really transcend your book, transcend sports. I mean, these are lessons that everybody on and off the court should really carry with them day in and day out. You know, they're really life lessons. So take us back through your career. You were the head coach at Kent State from 96 to 2001. When you were at Kent State in the Akron area, where was LeBron James? What stage was LeBron James at that point? Because you weren't too far away from where he grew up, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I know him well. To be exact, he was just in junior high when I was at Kent. Okay. And then I watched him in high school play too. Do you know in high school, in his senior year, 80% of his games were played at the Quicken Loan Arena, at the NBA arena. So that tells you, and they filled the house every single game.
In downtown Cleveland.
In downtown Cleveland.
Wow, okay.
So what I'm saying is they knew what they had there from the very beginning. They knew he was gonna be great. And the issue that is very difficult to put together in your mind is when someone has that much pressure and those many expectations on him, to still come out and not only complete the expectations, but go further than the expectation. That tells you what you had there.
When you look back at your coaching career, what would be the most memorable experience for you personally?
Oh boy, you know, 43 years, and that's a long time now. But when I think about it, you know, I think about the first place I was at was Kent State. And when you think about Kent State, you know, at the time I was coming into a situation that was not very successful. They didn't have a lot and they were trying to figure it all out. And I went into that place and I was just as excited, joyful, giddy, if you want to call it. And I remember, and it talks about it in the book, in the in the beginning, it talks about how I was in at the Final Four and I ran into Tubby Smith, and he said, he told me not to take that job because nothing's got you. You know, you're not going to do anything at that place. You need, you, if you wait longer, you can decide where you want to go. But I was so excited about doing this that it wasn't even a question in my mind. And when people ask me, was anything different than going there, than going to Rutgers and going to Cleveland State? It was just the beginning of something. And that's really what was exciting for me, to start something at the beginning.
And brag about your accolades with each program, if you would.
Well, it all started, obviously, at Kent State. And that's how I was able to move and move and move. At Kent State, for my final 3 years, we went to the NCAA 2 of the 3 years. I was there 5 years. And then we went deep into the NIT my fourth year. So my name had gotten out there. And we were having a great deal of success. And we played a lot. I played against a lot of teams. But here's the key, what got my name out there a lot. We upset many of the major programs in the country. The year that I took the Rutgers job, we had beaten number four in the country, Indiana. In the NCAA tournament. So now all of a sudden they know what you're doing. They're excited about you. Then when I got to Rutgers, you know, that was a great time too. For 5 years, we really, really improved that program, you know, because it was down two when I took it. And then, you know, we went 3 of the 4 years to postseason tournament. And then the 1 year was the big year, was the third year I was there. We went to the finals of the NIT and we played Michigan for the championship. And it was, I'll never forget that moment, because we were playing at Madison Square Garden. And Rutgers, you know, or New Jersey's not far from New York, literally 45 minutes. And there were trains coming from Rutgers or New Jersey to New York to Madison Square Garden. And it had to be a number of trains. Each one of them were filled with Rutgers fans. They had put paraphernalia everywhere. Things were all over the place. They were singing songs. And the only reason why I know this, because I wasn't on the train, was my wife went on the train and she was so impressed with what was going on, the excitement. Then when I came out to that game to play Michigan in that game, Madison Square Garden seats around 20, 22,000 people. I bet you at least 15 to 16,000 were Rutgers fans. Just red, just yelling. I said, man, this is unbelievable.
That's awesome. And then at Cleveland State, 2006 to what, 2017?
Right.
Well, that's a long time at Cleveland State. And you did some great things. I remember when you got Cleveland State into the NCAAs.
Yes. And then we beat someone big in there. We beat Wake Forest, who's number five in the country. And you know, there were some things there that I thought really was turned around. You know, when I got to Cleveland State, they had nothing. What I'm saying, it was rock bottom in where to go. And the athletic director at the time, his name was Lee Reed, who is now the athletic director at Georgetown. He literally came to me and said, hey, you need to bring this program out of the doldrums and bring it up. And so, you know, we put everything into it. And it grew. And that was the positive thing about Cleveland State, because they got a coach there now that's doing a fantastic job. And I think he's piggybacking on some of the things that occurred in the past there. And that's what you need to do to have success anywhere you go. And it was great there. You know, going to the NCAA was good. But, you know, I mean, we did a lot of firsts at Cleveland State. I give you an example. Have you ever heard of the Nike All-American Camp?
Sure.
We had it there for 2 years, and everyone in the country wondered, how could we get it there? And I thought that was unique. That was a first time thing that ever went on there. And so, you know, all three places, we were the first in many things, but we wanted to be the last as well.
I love it. And then you decided after coaching at Cleveland State that you were going to retire?
Yes, I was at there. I was going into my 12th year, and I had to make a decision, because I think I had 2 years left on my contract, and I was trying to decide if I was going to go out now or, you know, or take this or continue on and fight it. Something that happened in college basketball that really upset me. And it's really bad today. It's been even has been harder in this area than any other place. There's a transfer rule that came out, and it was out before, but basketball really hadn't looked at it. And it was the fifth year transfer rule. And so a kid could go 4 years and say something happens, and get injured or something, he has a fifth year. And then now you've built him up. That person even has a chance to get his master's degree or anything else. However, they were starting to use the rule the wrong way. And what they were doing was, if they felt you had a good player at the mid-major level, the top level would come down and just say, hey, come on in your fifth year and play for us. And the rule was you could go to another school as long as you graduated and play immediately. And I lost five players in my 2 years, my last 2 years there. And one of the years, we had two all-league players and we were picked to win everything. And we lost them because those things occurred. So I had to make a decision. Did I want to continue in this movement or did I want to, you know, just take what has happened and move on? And I decided to take what has happened and moved on.
What have you learned the most, Coach, from your athletes, would you say?
Well, you know, the biggest thing I've learned is that there's good and bad in everyone. However, it's your responsibility to bring out the good. So when you have a responsibility of being the leader, the director, or whatever it is of what organization you have, you got to work with those people to make sure that they bring out the best that's in them. That's what I have learned. So when I was coaching, I had to make sure this player, regardless of the circumstances from his past experience in life, I had to bring the best out of him. And then if you do that correctly, it carries on in their afterlife. And that's why I have so many players calling me back, communicating with me after the fact, because it was all about that. I put that first in their development.
Well, that's a good place to stop. We could continue forever, but I really appreciate you coming on, Coach Gary Waters, former head basketball coach at Kent State, Rutgers, Cleveland State, did some remarkable things with those teams on and off the court. As I say, the book's called 10 Principles of a Character Coach, all the best, Coach. And I can't wait to, I know you're working on a trilogy, right? So I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, it is a trilogy. And the next book that's coming out, I hope to have it out in 2022. And it's called Coaching Millennials from a Character Perspective. So, you know, when you're dealing with millennials, you know, you got a whole different deal of teaching you have to do there. However, underneath, there's a little caption that says the Rutgers experience. So it was my time when I was at Rutgers.
That should be very interesting, Coach. Well, thanks again and look forward to having you on the show, Sports Interview, another time.
Okay. Thanks, Ann. It's been wonderful.